It was a voluntary conference, organised by the trade in an attempt to claw back some control. The Surgeon General, who was chairing it, acknowledged that anything we draw up here is simply in the form of suggestions, but not any authority in the way of police regulations. It was, as Wiley's boss later put it, a whitewash. The issues were debated. Stewart made a passionate speech to the radium industry. "The luminous watch is purely a fad. Do you want to go ahead with the use of a thing which is so useless, which has, in spite of everything you can do, an element of serious danger in it? I certainly hope that you are going to agree that it is not worth what it costs." But the companies did not agree. One firm said that 85% of its business came from luminous dials. It was far too lucrative an industry to abandon. The executives argued that only New Jersey cases had come to light, so it wasn't a nationwide problem. With Flynn having silenced the Waterbury girls, Stewart could riposte with only one formally documented case outside USRC, which was evidenced by the Ella Cruz lawsuit in Illinois, yet hers was only a suspected case and not proven. The lack of evidence of an endemic problem meant the girls' supporters were powerless to push through any proposals, even though Wiley's boss called it cold-blooded murder in industry. The conference didn't confirm that radium poisoning existed, or even that radium was dangerous. It simply agreed that further study should continue via two committees, yet there is no record the committees ever met. As the New Jersey girls' stories became yesterday's news, no one was championing the dial painter's cause anymore. "The Radium Corps," Berry wrote in frustration, "is playing a game." And, it seemed, the radium companies were winning. There were two other delegates worthy of mention at the National Radium Conference, Joseph Kelly and Rufus Fordyce of Radium Dial, the executives who had recently signed their names beneath the company statement in the Ottawa Press. They appear only to have listened and not contributed to the debate. They listened, as one specialist said, "My advice to anyone manufacturing watches today would be to cut out the brush, because you can paint on in another way." They listened as the New Jersey girls' deaths and disabilities were debated. They listened as the industry got away with murder. And then they went home. Chapter 34. Ottawa, Illinois, 1929. On 26th of February, 1929, radium poisoning investigator Sven Kerr made his way to the LaSalle County Courthouse in the little town of Ottawa. He was surprised by how quiet it was. Today, there was a hearing in the Ella Cruz case, and given the cacophony caused by the radium lawsuits out east, he had expected more fuss. Yet nobody was around. Not an eyelash flickered in the sleepy town. Inside the courthouse, during the hearing, it was equally undramatic. Here there were no throngs of journalists, no star witnesses, no dueling attorneys. All that happened was that the Cruz family's lawyer, George Weeks, simply stood to request a postponement. With momentum provided by the New Jersey lawsuits, Kerr was surprised he wasn't pushing it through more quickly. Afterwards, when Kerr questioned Weeks, he discovered why he wasn't. The lawyer had needed to ask for postponement several times because he knew nothing about radium poisoning and could not find any physician in Ottawa who could give him information.